From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. After 16 days and counting on government shutdown and a near miss on national default, it is deal time in Washington tonight. Senate leaders have reached a deal that will reopen the government and raise the debt ceiling. John Boehner's Republican House looks ready to swallow that deal. It is good news for furloughed workers, investors, and the nation's foreign creditors. It is a tough lesson for Tea Party true believers, but they say they will fight on. The deal is a temporary fix. It kicks the can down the road until early next year. It has been a remarkable day in Washington. In this special live evening edition of On Point, the deal and its likely fallout, you can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you make of this unfolding outcome to the first federal shutdown in 17 years? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We've got reporters and politicians, Republican and Democrat, lined up for you tonight. Joining us right now from Washington, Susan Davis, Chief Congressional Correspondent for USA Today. Susan, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Ryan Grimm is here, Washington Bureau Chief at the Huffington Post. Two appearances with us in one day, a tall order, Ryan. Thanks for coming back.
Pleasure to do it.
And Lisa Lehrer is here, White House Correspondent and former Congressional Correspondent for Bloomberg News. Lisa, it's great to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Susan Davis, what's the timetable as we speak? When are votes expected? Where?
We're right on the verge of it. We expect the Senate to vote within the hour, possibly the half hour, on the Senate bill. I don't think there's any doubt at this point that it's going to pass, and probably by a pretty wide margin. And then we expect the House to vote later tonight, and where they're going to expect to pass it as well. It'll be curious to see in both chambers how many Republicans vote for it in the end, but I don't think that the end result is in any doubt at this point.
Ryan Grimm, is there any chance that Republicans will, you know, they've got their Hastert rule saying they won't bring anything up without a majority of the majority in favor, which has meant in this Congress that if they didn't have a majority of Republicans, they wouldn't even bring it up. Will John Boehner have to break that Hastert rule to bring this to the floor and pass it with the Democrats?
I haven't counted them up exactly, but the Hastert rule has been broken so many times by John Boehner, it's hard to even continue calling it a rule. Yes, he has said a rule of convenience at this point. Right. It's a rule. If you were going to do it anyway, you'll say, well, we did it that way because of the Hastert rule. The Hastert rule is dead. And this is how we knew that this would go through the entire time. There was never a path to get anything through the Republican-controlled House that only had Republican votes that would also pass the Senate and be signed by the White House. That type of bill does not exist. So we spent the last 6 weeks searching for it, and they finally admitted it doesn't exist, and now they're going to do it the way we all knew that they would do it.
Let's listen to a little bit of the sound of today's action. Shortly before noon today, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said the Senate had reached final agreement on a deal.
This is not a time for pointing fingers of blame. This is a time of reconciliation.
Well, sort of reconciliation. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said the compromise reopens the government, avoids default, protects spending cuts that Republicans had pushed through earlier, some Democrats had sought to reverse. Here is Mitch McConnell.
This is far less than many of us had hoped for, frankly, but it's far better than what some had sought. Now it's time for Republicans to unite behind other crucial goals.
Obamacare still standing. At the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue this afternoon, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said President Obama does not look at himself as having won this latest budget battle.
There are no winners here. The American people have paid a price for this. And nobody who's sent here to Washington by the American people can call themselves a winner if the American people have paid a price for what's happened.
Lisa Lehrer, you're covering the White House. There's been a great silence from the White House during much of this. The president, a few meetings behind closed doors, but by and large has left it to Congress. What's the White House view of what's unfolding here tonight, Lisa?
Oh, even though you just heard spokesman Jay Carney say that they do not view this as a win, behind the scenes they do view this as a win. The president has made a point of saying that he would not negotiate over the debt ceiling, and that's something that many of the president and many of the people close to him feel he made a mistake on in 2011. So really, since December, he's been saying very publicly that this is not, he wouldn't be held for ransom for the debt ceiling. And in fact, he's made no concessions to Republicans in this deal. So it is a win for the White House, certainly with, nearly two-thirds of people saying that they would replace their member of Congress immediately. They can't really, he has to be careful about how he casts this. But I think in Washington, it's understood that the president did well in this deal.
Susan Davis, walk us through the elements of the deal. We've got government funded, but only through January 15th, the reopening. Debt ceiling effectively raised until just February 7th. What were the agreements that made this little window of reopening and no default possible?
Harry Reid this morning when he announced the deal, he hailed it as a historic bipartisan compromise. And I would put the brakes on that a little bit and say there is nothing particularly historic nor grand about anything that's in this deal. It's a very short-term punt. It creates a situation by which there's a very real possibility we're right back at the same question we've been facing back in January and February. What the package did do is set up a framework by which the House and Senate will have to engage in formal budget negotiations and are told to report back by December 13th on what you think the plan is should be to raise the debt ceiling and do the next CR, set spending levels, do all those things. I think anyone who's been paying attention to the budget fights in Washington over the past 3 years can say that there is a very small chance that this budget conference is going to be successful where other budget negotiations have failed. Places like the Super Committee, places like the previous talks between the president and John Boehner to find a grand bargain. So, it punts the situation. It gets it past the holidays, which in some ways is seen as a victory here on Capitol Hill, but it doesn't solve the longer-term problems. And the chances of these issues coming up again are very real, particularly when you have House Speaker John Boehner saying today that the fight over Obamacare is not over and that they will continue the fight and they will look for, in his words, more targeted strikes to try and rein in the health care law.
John Boehner saying, we fought the good fight. The fight is not over. Ryan Grimm, this all began with Tea Party determination to defund or delay Obamacare. Is there any bite out of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, in this deal, Ryan?
No. There is kind of a tiny little nibble where there's kind of a conspiracy going around that anybody that wants Obamacare can sign up for it and lie about their income. And so the Republicans addressed that in the deal. And so there will be some mild form of reform that will go towards income verification for people getting subsidies through the Affordable Care Act. I haven't looked too closely at that provision and how it actually plays out, but I understand that it's not substantially different than current law.
So
Obamacare was addressed in this deal
in that tiny way, but really no
right.
other. I mean, that's a long way from defunding or delaying.
No, it sure is. They came out swinging, and first they wanted it repealed. Then Republicans said, well, okay, maybe that's not quite possible, but let's just delay it. If we can't do that, let's defund it. Okay, if we can't do that, let's take it away from Hill staffers and members of Congress. But none of that was possible. It was never going to be possible with as long as President Obama is the one in office. It's called Obamacare. He's not going to repeal his signature achievement. And so they were left tinkering with some type of Health and Human Services income verification regulation.
So Susan calls this a punt, a short-term punt. Is it an abject defeat for the Tea Party? Is it live to fight another day? Is it somehow both, Ryan?
Oh, it's a thorough rout. They were certainly crushed here, and I think it's because Ted Cruz never came into this with any strategy to win. I don't think that Ted Cruz actually expected that the House would go along with him. I think that he and Mike Lee planned to raise money off of this defund Obamacare strategy all summer long, and I think they were as surprised as anybody else to see how much traction it got. Then once you had an actual government shutdown, there was no path to victory. It wasn't as if they sat down and said, okay, here is how we're going to actually repeal Obamacare, A, B, C, D. They said, here is how we're going to gin up a lot of publicity for ourselves, build our campaign list, drive donations to our campaign, and that all worked. It was sort of like, whoops, we ended up costing the country $24 billion in lost economic revenue as a result. So there was never really a chance that Obamacare was going to get repealed. And so in that sense, it's a complete rout of the Tea Party. And the next time that they threaten something like this, everybody will think back, look what you did to the world economy last time you tried this. You didn't get what you want. It's a complete status quo going forward. So please, not again.
Here was John McCain on the floor of the Senate moments after the bipartisan deal was announced today.
We are now seeing the end of this agonizing odyssey that this body has been put through, but far more importantly, the American people have been put through. It's one of the more shameful chapters that I have seen in the years that I've spent here in the Senate.
John McCain today on the floor of the Senate after a deal was finally reached. As we speak tonight, the Senate and House lined up to vote to end the government shutdown of 16 days and counting, to move the debt ceiling so that default does not happen. We're looking at the fallout of the deal on Capitol Hill for Republicans, for Democrats, for the Tea Party. Lisa Lehrer is with us, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. Susan Davis is here, chief congressional correspondent for USA Today. And Ryan Grimm is here from the Huffington Post, Washington bureau chief there. We will talk with Republican politician, Democratic politician when we return. You can join us. What do you think of this unfolding deal of what's just unfolded in Washington? 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point Live. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the deal today in Washington as the House and Senate prepare to vote tonight to reopen government and not default. Susan Davis is with us from USA Today. Lisa Lehrer, Bloomberg News, White House correspondent. Ryan Grimm, Huffington Post. We'll talk in a moment with congresspeople from Texas and the state of New York. You can join us in this hour. What do you see having just played out in Washington as we now await votes to end, at least for a little bit here, the sort of crisis and paralysis the country has been in for the last 16 days. Some Republicans very unhappy about it tonight. Here was Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz speaking on the floor of the Senate this evening, blasting fellow Senate Republicans for not holding firm, he said, on extracting concession from Democrats in the White House.
It is heartbreaking to the American people that Senate Republicans divided as they did and decided to direct their criticism, direct their attention, direct their cannon fire at House Republicans and at those standing with the American people.
But very different interpretations from the Democratic side of the aisle. Here's Chuck Schumer of New York pushing back, talking with CNN.
Ted Cruz says the American people lost. Well, fewer than 20% of the American people advocate his policy, which is shut the government down, don't pay your debt unless we end Obamacare. Some people want to do that, but not a majority, not even close.
Susan Davis, Lisa Lehrer, Ryan Grimm, please stand by. With us right now from Washington is Republican Congressman Michael Burgess, represents Texas' 26th district in the heart of North Texas, a member of the Tea Party Caucus. Representative Burgess, Congressman Burgess, welcome to On Point. Good to have you. What are you thinking about the deal tonight?
Hey, Tom. Well, it's no solution, so I would disagree with the characterization that the problem has been solved. The problem has been perhaps successfully postponed, but it will exist again. And here's the real deal. The amount of debt this country is racking up is clearly unsustainable. At some point, there is going to have to be a reckoning of that. Yes, the actions taken in the last 16 days have been not unprecedented, but something not seen by the country in some time. But on the other hand, when you get to that breaking point with the debt, how much control do you think we'll have over our future at that point? It will actually be the bondholders, many of whom are foreign countries, who will actually be dictating the terms of surrender at that point.
Was it a mistake for the Tea Party to grab on to government shutdown to try to defund or delay Obamacare this time out, Congressman?
No, you know, I don't think so because, constitutionally, the power of the purse resides in the House of Representatives. And, you know, look, in the past, when a Democratic House has challenged a Republican president on a funding issue, I don't think Edward Boland from Massachusetts, when he in 1985 prohibited any funding for the CIA in Nicaragua with the Boland Amendment, and actually got the Reagan administration in a good deal of hot water. Well, that was a limitation on a funding bill as an amendment that was put forward by a Democratic congressman.
A long way from the scale of the Affordable Care Act, though, I must say.
You know, but what is our number one problem today in this country? Of course, it's the struggling economy, and it's the job creation. And we have seen over the last 6 months the devastating toll the Affordable Care Act has taken on job creation. And then, look, I'm no fan of someone like Ron Gibbs, but over the last couple of days, what did you hear him say? That this rollout has been excruciatingly embarrassing. All of the millions, hundreds of millions of dollars that have been spent, all of the time invested, and he thinks someone should be fired. You know what? I agree with Ron Gibbs for perhaps the first time in my life.
I don't know about the devastating toll on job creation. I think we'll watch that space. But what about this threat of government shutdown, threat of default? Is that now out of the Tea Party arsenal, or are we going to be back there in January, February of next year, Congressman?
Well, it's not the Tea Party arsenal.
Well, it was this time.
It is the purview of the House of Representatives. We have the constitutional authority and obligation to control the purse strings.
But you know darn well who drove it. I mean, it was the Tea Party caucus that drove it.
Well, excuse me, that is not going to go away. But realistically, you have two crucial dates coming up. Now, I hope the Appropriations Committee on both the House and the Senate side will do their work that has been postponed for far too long. And if they will do their work and the bills are passed in the House and the bills are passed in the Senate and a conference committee meets and figures out the difference, then the continuing resolution that expires on January 15th becomes a moot point because you have appropriations bills to fund the remainder of the fiscal year. A far more important point is what happens when the statutory debt limit is met again. And here is a problem, because in the bill that's being passed by the Senate tonight, this is a date, not a dollar figure. And as we've seen for the last 5 months, the Treasury Secretary can use the so-called extraordinary measures and move dollars around within accounts. We actually hit the debt limit sometime in May, if the truth be told, but the debt clock hasn't changed because it's been robbing from Peter to pay Paul, so no additional loans are taken out, but within the department, there's a good deal of cash shuffling going on, and what Secretary Liu has essentially told the country is he's out of options, but basically tomorrow or the next day or the day after.
How are you going to vote this evening or early tomorrow morning, whenever it comes up in the House? How will you vote, Congressman Burgess?
It doesn't matter whether it's this evening, tomorrow morning, or next week. I'll vote no on this proposal because I don't think it solves our problem, and certainly I think it has the potential for making some things worse.
Part of the deal here is to sit down and talk about this, ideally before December 13th, to try and come up with some grand bargain. Are you, as the Tea Party caucus, prepared?
No, I don't think it's a grand bargain. I mean, there is the agreement that budget conferees for the budget conference committee will be named. I'll give the Senate this one, or the Democrats in the House this one. That probably should have happened several months ago.
Yep.
The difficulty was coming to the pre-conference agreement. The Senate is stuck on the concept of it wants a tax increase. It doesn't want to talk about anything else. That is how that discussion is going to end. There will be no, in my prediction, there will be no grand bargain. There will be a continued stalemate or standoff. But
and will the standoff be over Obamacare, sir? Over
Obamacare, that the conference is going to happen because that's the way it's supposed to go. On the Affordable Care Act, you know, look, there has been a school of thought, and this is likely where things are right now. This law is so bad that the best way to get rid of it is, as President Lincoln used to say, it's strict enforcement. The thing will collapse under its own weight. Probably best at this point to stand back and let the cookie crumble. People are going to get hurt in that. I'm just telling you, as a physician, doctors' practices, patients, hospitals are going to get hurt financially in this collapse. But honestly, I've done everything I can to prevent that from happening. I thought that was the right thing to do. If you see a train wreck coming, shouldn't you do something to try to prevent it? I've done everything at my disposal. I think it's going to collapse. We'll see whether I'm correct or not. The thing is, people are going to get hurt in that. The template, the precedent that was set, of course, is 1988, when Dan Rostenkowski had to repeal his catastrophic care bill that he had passed to great fanfare under the Reagan administration. President Reagan signed it, but President Bush signed the repeal a year later because it was so desperately unpopular.
There's the Tea Party view out of Texas. Congressman Michael Burgess still dug in this evening. Congressman Burgess, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll go in just a moment to Congresswoman Nita Lowey out of New York. But Susan, do a little interpretation for me if you would there. What does that portend for the coming new round of negotiations over all this? There's Congressman Burgess right out of the Tea Party caucus.
Well,
One thing that really strikes me about his comments, and this is part of the internal Republican turmoil we see, is that House Speaker John Boehner, Eric Cantor, the Majority Leader, and Kevin McCarthy, the Majority Whip, stood before their conference this morning and said, the three of us are going to vote for this deal, and we think you should too. And it says something about the status of the party's ability to negotiate when the top three leaders say they're going to go one way, and rank-and-file members like Congressman Burgess go the other way. If you The House is a majority body. If you don't have 218 votes to move your agenda, you can't govern. And John Boehner has repeatedly, again and again and again, tried to build some kind of party unity in order to perhaps try and get some leverage in these talks. And every time he fails to be able to put his members and numbers on the board, it gives the advantage to the Democrats, and they move further and farther away from the policy outlines that he just spoke about. There is merit to what a lot of Republicans are saying about the rollout of the law and things that could be done to affect the health care law that might make it easier, affect policy on doctors and patients and ways that you can improve any law and in the enactment process. But it's so tied up in this all-or-nothing debate that it's going to be very difficult to advance any kind of policy, bipartisan policy solutions to actually fix the kind of problems that we are seeing with the law.
Susan Davis, Lisa Allaire, Ryan Grimm, stand by. Representative Nita Lowey joins us right now from Washington, Democrat, representing New York's 17th district. That includes parts of Westchester, Rockland counties. She's the top Democrat on the House Appropriations Committee. Congresswoman Lowey, thank you very much for joining us.
Tom, I'm a regular listener, and I'm delighted to be with you.
What lesson do you take away from what we've seen in the last 16 days and the conclusion apparently tonight?
Well, first of all, I am pleased that we finally appear to be approaching an end to this unnecessary shutdown, the threat of default. It's gone on for too long. And my question to my friends on the other side of the aisle is, has it been worth it? You have 800,000 federal workers furloughed, families that are suffering. They need nutrition aid. They need disaster relief. They're suffering economic damage, possible ratings downgrade. And my lesson is we have to stop lurching from crisis to crisis. And we cannot let the fringe of the Republican Party, whose goal is obstruction, dictate the agenda of Congress. This is a great body. I'm proud to be a member of the United States Congress in the United States of America. And what this bill does is give us 3 months to January 15th to finalize reasonable 2014 spending bills that gain bipartisan support in both chambers.
Are we going to be right back in the same deadlock, Congressman Lowey?
I really hope not. I hope that some people have got to come to their senses. In fact, I heard Michael Burgess before, and I was talking to some other friends on the other side of the aisle, and I thought there was going to be a huge number of people who would vote with us. And they tell me that the right-wing fringe out there, the various groups that are lobbying them, have so much control that they were worried that they'd barely get the 17 votes they need. So,
along with the Democrats to push this through tonight.
I expect every Democrat would vote for it. Look, we can have difference of opinions. I talk to friends on the other side of the aisle, but this is the United States Congress. We've become the laughingstock of the world. It is a dreadful thing that in the greatest democracy in the world, we should be facing this kind of shutdown, my way or the highway. It is very, very disturbing to me. And I am hoping that December 13th, we will finally get a top-line number. Chairman Rogers and I have always worked together with Senator Mikulski and Senator Shelby. I'm hoping that we can work this out because we'll have until January 15th, the day the CR expires.
Right.
And I'm hoping sensible people can prevail.
Michael Burgess says no grand bargain. Are you looking for, expecting, prepared to work for a grand bargain on entitlements, long-term spending, the works, or are you looking for another short-term fix of some kind?
I am hoping that we can have a thoughtful discussion of the budget. And I'm very worried about these terms, grand bargain. They may have an agenda, they meaning the Republicans. We want to get a budget that makes sense, that doesn't cut the National Institutes of Health, that really supplies the resources we need, that creates jobs, keep our economy strong. And if they have other things that they want to talk about, certainly including entitlements, we'll be happy to talk about it. But in advance, we certainly can't make any commitment. The most important thing from my perspective with regard to appropriations, we have to avoid a second year of across-the-board cuts. They're hurting every aspect of our economy, services and investments. And I want to say one other thing. I heard him talk a good deal about the Affordable Care Act, mm-hmm. or Obamacare, whatever you want mm-hmm. to talk about it. I talk to people in my community all the time, and I take their recommendations and their suggestions. I'm not happy with this computer glitch. I'm very upset with what went on.
Should be.
They better fix it. You're not kidding. And they better fix it quickly. But, you know, whether it's Social Security or Medicare, every great piece of legislation has been modified, and we should do it in a democratic process. Sit down, talk it through, have hearings. I don't want to hand over our medical choices back to the insurance company and let those premiums keep rising. And I think we're up to, what, 42 votes to repeal the ACA? It's been passed by the House, passed by the Senate, affirmed by the Supreme Court. But that doesn't mean that thoughtful people, Democrats and Republicans, working together, listening to people in our district, can't come up with ways to improve it.
But unmoved on defunding, at least as we speak this evening, Congresswoman Nita Lowey of New York's 17th District, On Point listener. Thank you very much for joining us tonight, Congresswoman.
Tom, and thank you for your outstanding program.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Well, Ryan, what do you say? There's the Republican, there's the Democrat. Has anybody moved in a way that's going to help the country move in the next 3 months?
I thought it was interesting that Congressman Burgess said that he was going to back off of Obamacare. And what I think his quote was, he would, at this point, let the cookie crumble, hoping that it would collapse under its own weight. You know, that's a genuine step forward for the Tea Party if they're going to acknowledge
that. It's a far piece from 16 days ago.
Well, I mean, the law, you know, it's being implemented. Mm-hmm. It was approved by the Supreme Court an awful long time ago. But, you know, the fact that you know, if others join him in saying the same thing, that, okay, look, it's the law and maybe it will collapse, rather than, let's hijack the global economy to try to defund it, then that actually is, you know, that's a step towards the center. And maybe you have to start with baby steps.
Lisa Lehrer, do you see the White House interested in a grand bargain, in this short-term punt timeout, as Susan Davis describes it, that we've got in front of us right now?
Well, I think the White House, like we heard from those two members from both sides of the aisle, is really skeptical that any kind of grand bargain could actually get done. That's because the positions fundamentally haven't changed. Republicans say that they won't raise additional tax revenue, and until they do agree to raise revenue, the president has said that he's not going to support even his own proposals to deal with entitlement programs like Medicare. So you're at this impasse that hasn't changed because of what we've just gone through over the past 2 weeks. So it doesn't really seem like anyone is talking about a grand bargain. On the Obamacare, I wanted to make one other point that I thought was really interesting, which was that if the Tea Party is backing away from pushing on that, it's a really interesting thing. And in part, I think that's because their push backfired. They had said, you know, the rationale for bringing this up and for making it such a big part of this spending fight was that by shining a light on, putting the spotlight on the health care law, it would bring up all these problems with the law. In fact, the reverse has happened, and it's been great for the White House in some ways because the law has had a really rough rollout. There's been a number of glitches. People have been unable to sign up, and approval is at the highest it's ever been in a year. So it's distracted from those problems.
While the crisis rolled on, Obamacare has stuttered, the stutter stepped out, and all eyes on
shutdown, and debt ceiling. As we speak tonight, the Senate has begun to vote on the deal. House up next. Lisa Lehrer, please stand by in Washington. Susan Davis with USA Today. Ryan Grimm with the Huffington Post. 800-423-8255. We will come to your calls. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live this evening. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the deal today in Washington. Special edition of On Point, live this evening as the House and Senate prepare to vote tonight to reopen government and not default. Ryan Grimm is with us, Washington Bureau Chief for the Huffington Post. Lisa Lehrer is here, White House Correspondent for Bloomberg News, and Susan Davis, Chief Congressional Correspondent for USA Today. We're at 800-423-8255. We'll go to your calls first. Just a little John Boehner on WLW Cincinnati telling host there, Bill Cunningham, he expects a smooth passage of the bill in the House, and the government will reopen.
We did everything we could to get them to the table and to negotiate. They just kept saying no, 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 no. And so we fought the good fight. There's just no reason for our members to vote no today.
When will the government reopen?
I would expect this will happen tomorrow.
Fought the good fight. Nancy Pelosi doesn't think so. Here she was talking this afternoon with MSNBC, Minority Leader of the House.
This really was unnecessary. It's unfortunate that it happened. Hopefully there are lessons learned. I think part of it is they don't want our president to have the successes that our country needs. And so this is one way of standing in the way of that. But you know what? We're on a new path now. We have an agreement. We're going to pass it. It's going to pass in the Senate. We're going to pass it in the House.
Nancy Pelosi this afternoon. Let's go to our listeners. Southern Pines, North Carolina. Marion's calling. Hi, Marion. You are on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, hooray. My brother Matt, a scientist with USDA, can return to work tomorrow. I can stop calling Harry Reid's office every day and saying, go, Harry, go. And lastly, you know, breaking news to the Tea Party, our president has got spunk, and he is going to stand firm on principle, on values. And the Affordable Care Act, I always say, it will be rolled back when, you know, pigs fly, hell freezes over, and you can get blood out of a turnip. So I'm feeling good tonight, and I think our president will stand firm in the future.
Do you think we'll be right back in the same pickle 2 months from now, Marion, or not?
I think we will be back there, but I think, once again, the president, you know, is going to stand firm. And, you know, 66 million people reelected him. And so I don't know where the, you know, when people say that Obamacare is hurting millions of people, well, I haven't seen a shred of evidence of that. And, you know.
Marion, I appreciate
your
call.
Just move on again.
There's a rah-rah from Southern Pines. Susan Davis, what about the president here? Last time out, he tried to negotiate with John Boehner. It didn't go well. This time he said, I won't negotiate around the debt ceiling. Has he made his point? Is that history now? Or is he just going to have to face it again, bite the you know, fingernails again next time?
What's been fascinating about this latest round of budget talks is how little a role Obama, the president, played in them. And I think part of that is the White House having come off of these bruising and unsuccessful battles with Republicans, and even after following the fiscal cliff deal, which left a bad taste in a lot of congressional Democrats' mouth that they could have done better and they shouldn't have negotiated, they really let Harry Reid take the lead in this. I think that the White House, in almost every iteration, deferred to Reid's judgment, his strategy, and his call. And I think in that respect, they are very happy today of how this played out. But I would think if you were going to have to give someone credit for how this was orchestrated, it seems decisively much more a strategy that was born out of the Senate and directly out of Harry Reid's office than anything coming out of the White House, which has not had a tremendously good track record of negotiating with Congress and House Republicans in particular.
Lisa Lehrer, Harry Reid got it done, along with Mitch McConnell, but what about the White House here? Do they see as having won by being the kind of stone sphinx who just wouldn't negotiate around the debt ceiling? Is that a win for the White House, or will it come right back in their face next time?
Well, they certainly, the sense over there is certainly that it's a win. I think Susan is right, and Harry Reid was managing a lot of the strategy on this and was definitely the public face of any talks. The White House was coordinating behind the scenes. There were White House staffers in Harry Reid's office, you know, involved with the negotiations in the final days, and everything all the demands that he came out with were run by the White House. But they definitely played a far smaller role in the day-to-day negotiations of this deal. than they have in the past. And that was by design. I also think that they felt they had the luxury of doing that because of where the approval ratings were. The president's approval rating was rising as the shutdown continued. Republicans were sinking, so they didn't feel that they had to do a lot. They also questioned in the White House the utility of negotiating with House Speaker John Boehner, because they felt like he doesn't really have a firm control over his own members. So they could have a lot of meetings with him and he could say one thing and that wouldn't necessarily be the result in the House. So they didn't really see that as a really useful exercise.
Yeah.
But I do think that they're very happy with how this turned out. They feel like the president took a principled stand. And what's been striking to me is how little he's been out in public talking about this in the past several days. On Monday, when the proposals were going back and forth across Capitol Hill and there were all kinds of meetings over there, the president was at a charity making sandwiches with furloughed workers in Washington, and he made sort of one comment about what was going on. You know, we do expect to hear from him tonight, but he really hasn't been very strongly out in public on any of this.
Sometimes silence says a lot, I guess, if you don't have to say anything, and things, at least so far, breaking his way. Let's look at another big figure in all this, Ryan Grimm. Ted Cruz was right out front. We put a question up on Facebook, what's the big lesson after this wild political ride? And lots of response there. But JGC says just this, Ted Cruz, the wilderness years. I don't know. Ryan, listen to Ted Cruz today and a little more here. Here's the Republican senator who had his epic marathon speech on the floor over Obamacare, who encouraged everybody to dig in. Here was Ted Cruz talking with reporters today after news of a deal came out.
Unfortunately, once again, it appears the Washington establishment is refusing to listen to the American people. The deal that has been cut provides no relief to the millions of Americans who are hurting because of Obamacare.
There's that assertion again, and no apologies from Ted Cruz, though plenty of Republicans, plenty upset with him. On the other hand, Rush Limbaugh today not mincing words about how he looks at all this, the GOP, sounding maybe like he would still be a cruiser. Here's Limbaugh.
I was trying to think if ever in my life I could remember any major political party being so irrelevant.
Ryan Grimm, how does Ted Cruz come out of this? And what about this sort of Limbaugh element there that was prepared, you know, to fight to the last man on defunding?
Well, you know, he's not going to filibuster at the last minute. That's a little bit of a departure from, his stand at the Alamo here. But, you know, he comes out of this with his campaign war chest much richer, with his campaign email list stacked with angry conservatives who are willing to continue to support him. He comes out with a much increased national stature, but he's also extremely bloodied with what's left of the GOP establishment. You know, a lot can happen between now and 2016, but he has very much isolated himself almost in a third party type of a situation. He is, you know, he represents a faction of the party that doesn't want to have anything to do with the center or the center right of the party. And we're in very unpredictable waters, and he's going to see where this position that he's staked out is going to take him.
Let's go to Steve in Windham, Connecticut. Steve, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
What about this split in the Republican Party? I'm observing this real hardcore, Ted Cruz, Tea Partyist, and the regular, generic Republican. It's no longer the solid South, my friend.
Yeah. Susan Davis, what about it? Where does that go? John McCain says wacko birds. Of course, that was a little while back, but here we are. There's so much ill will, so much within the GOP, so much upset over Ted Cruz pushing this to where it went. Is that all healed now? And where does John Boehner end up? I mean, I'm seeing him hailed by Tea Partiers tonight, even though they're sort of retreating here, but he's retreated in a way that seems all right with them. What happens with the GOP's internal dynamics now, Susan?
It is definitely not healed. This is just the latest chapter in what is still a unfolding story about the evolution of the Republican Party and which direction they're going to go in. I mean, this fight, and obviously it sort of became the symbolic heads of it, where John McCain is sort of seen as the old school Republican wing, and Ted Cruz, who's embodied this sort of younger, grassroots activist Tea Party movement. And there's a lot of conflict there. I think that part of the reason why John Boehner could not get 218 votes is because he's under, his lawmakers are under tremendous pressure from these grassroots, particularly outside groups that are threatening them with primary threats. Already the most popular trio of groups that we are most often hear about in Washington, the Club for Growth, Heritage Action, and Freedom Works, all came out in unison today and said they would key vote against this bill, that they'll primary any Republican that votes for it, and that they, in the terms of Freedom Work, called it complete surrender. So when you have this sort of friction where I think there's a lot of lawmakers who would like, we jokingly refer to them as the vote no, hope yes caucus, mm-hmm. where they support this leadership in theory, but they can't take the votes that they need to take to support them because they face too much political pressure back home to not do it. And this has huge implications going forward. It's going to have huge implications in the 2014 midterm elections and who determines the control of the Senate and the House. And it's going to have huge implications in the 2016 elections as Republicans try and determine who can win that party's nomination.
Ryan, we spoke earlier today, and you were saying that time itself will take some pressure off some Republicans who may fear that sort of primary challenge from the right. How do you see that playing out, Ryan?
Well, that's right. So in order to file for a primary, you have to get your signatures in by a certain date. A lot of these primaries take place in the spring, summer in the fall. The deadlines to be part of those are much before that. In order to get those signatures going, you have to get a campaign going much sooner. You kind of have to start wanting to run right about now if you're going to marshal a real primary challenge. By January, or especially by around May, when we'll actually hit the next debt ceiling, it's far too late in many areas to mount one. So that will mean that you'll have dozens of people who were afraid to support Boehner or the House Republican leadership this time around, who will have much more political freedom next time, because the next time that the primary voters will have a crack at them would be 2016, and that's just a lifetime of politics away.
We're looking at the deal in Washington tonight. The votes have begun in the U.S. Senate. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's go to Robert in Bangor, Maine. Robert, thanks for calling.
Thank you, Tom. My concern is I think we need to address this deficit issue with both an increase in revenue and cuts in spending. We have a revenue right now that's about 15.9% of GDP. Hasn't been that since about 1959, when the country was half the size it is.
Mm-hmm.
That was also before Medicare. Additionally, about 46% of revenue collected presently is from individual income taxpayers, 34% payroll taxes, and corporate taxes have continued to shrink since the 1950s, going from an average of about 35% down to below 10%. In fact, more than two-thirds of businesses and corporations aren't paying any taxes today.
Robert, you're right on it, and I think we've got the general picture. I like this. I mean, that sounds to me like Americans just weighing this carefully and saying, let's take care of business. Susan Davis, what about that? Do you see a chance that in these conversations we'll get that kind of compromise? Spending cuts, yes, let's look at what we need to do long-term, but also some revenue, which has been the president's bottom line. It can't all just be in spending cuts. Is that chance out there now, Susan?
I think the chances of that are almost near zero.
Gee.
What Lisa said earlier, which I think is exactly the right point, is that even when we get into these budget talks, it's going to fall on the same sword it's been falling on all these other times. The only way you can really reach that kind of deal is if you have, for Democrats, if you're talking to them, they're saying that any kind of deal to do these kind of big things, it has to include more revenue. They don't say that they want to raise rates, but they want to close tax loopholes and reform the tax code, particularly corporate tax breaks and things like that. And if you talk to Republicans, you will know that there is not a chance that they are going to agree to any more revenue. And the only way you could arguably maybe do it is if you really did a fundamental entitlement reform, if you really did some kind of savings towards Medicare and Social Security and the long-term spending that we have. And I just don't see, either in the climate or in the atmosphere or in the political will in either party, that kind of grand bargain. We keep coming back to that term. I don't see it there. What I think is more likely, and what would be deemed a success by these budget talks in early next year, is if they can at the very least come to the spending terms for the next fiscal year, maybe the next 2 years, and maybe figure out what to do with the sequester, these unpopular across-the-board spending cuts that have had Washington sort of twisted in knots all this year. And if they can do that, which is a relatively small thing, I actually think that is more the metric by which these are going to be determined whether they succeed or fail.
Here's the sound of the voting as it began in the Senate tonight. The Senate voted for cloture to move ahead with the debt deal. Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont introduced the roll call.
The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Alexander.
Aye.
Ms. Ayotte.
Aye.
Ms. Baldwin.
Aye.
Mr. Barrasso.
And on it went. 25 Republican votes for it in the Senate. Somewhere along the way, more before it's over, no doubt. Carol in Louisville, Kentucky. Carol, thank you very much for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just have one comment. In all of the discussion that I've heard this evening, and granted I did not tune in the beginning of the show, I just finished a very long day taking care of patients who are hardworking, uninsured, and they are continually devastated by these political gambits that are going on the Hill, on both sides. At this point, I have very little respect for anyone on either party because they appear to have lost fight of what they're there for. They're there to take care of all of us, not just the people in their gerrymandered districts, not just their political cronies, and not just the people who are not paying taxes like these big companies. And I fail to see where having companies that pay no taxes or even get refunds is doing any good in making the economy better.
Carol,
cut, and the jobs are not coming, and they're not paying any better. If anything, I see that they're paying worse.
Carol, we've got the report from the hardworking doctor in the field with hardworking people who need help there tonight. Maybe they'll get it. I appreciate your call. 83-16, the cloture vote has passed the Senate at this point, and here we are. Ryan Grimm, there's that little gulp of comedy tonight, but you hear in Carol's report there from the field the frustration with all this. Here's another listener online. Matt says the lesson is the system is broken, probably past the point of fixing. How much damage to Americans' confidence in the competence of their elected representatives to deal with our country's problems, Ryan?
Well, the irony is that this was waged over Obamacare, which they claimed is costing jobs, but the fight against it actually, in real life, has cost people jobs. The fight in 2011 over the debt ceiling and this one combined to take tens of billions of dollars out of economic growth out of our system, and they're what you call own goals, and it's sad to watch happen.
The deal underway. Senate voting underway. House to follow. Ryan Grimm with the Huffington Post, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Lisa Lehrer, Bloomberg News White House correspondent there. Lisa, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
And Susan Davis, Chief Congressional Correspondent for USA Today. Susan, thanks for helping us be right on top of it.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.